This podcast is supported by the growing community of artists and art lovers through the Gently Does It Patreon page. Go to patreon.com/John Dalton Gently Does It to join the conversation. I'm very happy to be talking to Felicia Forte today in Detroit. Felicia is an artist. She paints intimate paintings that highlight the wonder of the easily overlooked, a sandwich, an ashtray, or an unguarded moment. She's shown her work in numerous group and solo exhibitions, and in 2015 and 16, her portraiture was exhibited at the National Portrait Gallery in London for the BP Portrait Award. So hello, Felicia. It's very nice to be talking to you.
Hello. It's nice to be here talking with you.
I know you're a big Star Trek fan, as am I. Do you know anything about the new series?
No, actually, I've been power watching every old series, and my boyfriend just told me they are coming out with a new television series, but that's all I know about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's called Discovery, and it's set 10 years before the original series. Tangential to the movies.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Now I remember he told me that. Yeah, I just finished Enterprise for the first time, and well, it's not so great, but
it's not their best.
I don't know. I'd be curious to see them do another one back in time.
Yeah, well, this one will be, but not as far back. This next one will be 10 years before Kirk and Spock and those on a parallel storyline.
I'll definitely be watching it. Yeah. I'm like my father. Any sci-fi, good or bad, I can watch it. All right. I prefer good, but...
Yeah, yeah. This podcast is going to be going out in the new year. It'll probably be the first one of the new year. Are you a New Year's resolution kind of person?
No,
me neither.
I think I'm always trying to improve things, but if I make a resolution that feels like too much pressure, then I rebel against myself. So I'll probably make a list and then get half of the things done, like most lists.
Yeah, no, I'm the same.
So I noticed they opened a new women-only gym in the neighborhood. This neighborhood I live in is heavily Islamic, so I think it would be interesting to go and see like this women-only gym and do that. There's all these fabrics hung in the window, so you can't see in at all, so I haven't been brave enough to step in, but I might do that. My old studio in San Francisco took an hour to walk to and from every day. And my new studio here has 8 steps up to the studio. So
you'd have to walk up and down the steps a lot to get the same kind of exercise.
Exactly.
My wife, Maggie, took up weightlifting recently. It's brilliant. Highly recommend it.
I saw Jane Radstrom, who just moved to Berlin, say that she just started lifting weights.
No, she's been doing it for a while.
Or just started again or something. She looks amazing.
Yeah. And she can heavy. She can lift her own body weight above her head.
That's impressive.
It is. Yeah. Okay. This is a question that came through Instagram. It's from Australian artist, and he was on the podcast as well, Carl James. And he asks, I'd like to know about that pivotal moment when you knew art was your destiny or passion. The light bulb moment. And then he adds the broader question, are artists made or born?
Okay. So the first part of the question is, when did I have a light bulb moment that I knew I was meant to be an artist?
Yeah, that pivotal moment when you knew, and he has that in capitals and inverted commas, so, you know, it's serious. Art is your destiny or passion.
I don't know that it is my destiny. I think it is my condition. I, like most children, was very interested in drawing and kept being interested in it, I think mostly because I showed promise in it and got attention for it and wanted to, you know, gain approval for being good at something, and was given opportunity to take classes and took advantage of that. And then I guess I never really thought it would be possible to be an artist, to make a living, to call yourself that. It was surprising to me when I finally managed to do that.
Yeah.
I always thought I would have to do something more practical. I was a waitress for a really long time. I'm trying to think. I don't know if there was any light bulb moment. There was a moment after many, many years of waiting tables where I just didn't want to do it anymore. It was depressing. And I had one other skill. And so with some pretty good planning, I decided to enter an art fair and also offer classes and cross my fingers that this would enable me to move away from waiting tables. And it worked. Luck and planning together. But yeah, I don't know if I ever had a light bulb moment. It was necessity.
Right.
So.
And what do you think about the second bit, his thing about are artists made or born?
I don't know. Born is very romantic. I'm pretty practical in the way I think about things. Maybe it's a combination. I think so many things have to do with timing and opportunity. Many a person who became a doctor could have been an artist had they had the right influence and inclination. Many of people who are quote unquote artists probably should be doctors.
Could there be something else? You know, like if they're rubbish at being at art, they're probably not going to be great doctors, you know. No one's going to die if you make a bad painting.
They could. They might die inside.
That's true. That is very true. And that's almost as bad. Almost.
Almost. I think that I've found meaning, which is maybe what we're getting at. I found meaning through working for a long time at this thing, which had less meaning to me when I started. But of course, I was young. Didn't really know that much. So I don't know. I think I'm growing into being an artist.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think I've done it long enough now that it's going to stick.
Yeah.
But I definitely tried to do something else easier. You know what? It's very hard to do this. So I tried to think of other things, in my teens and early 20s, maybe I could be a makeup artist. Not that that's not hard, but it seemed more fun to me.
Yeah.
And somehow I kept doing this. So here I am.
Was there a reason you chose painting and not music or film or acting or anything other of the arts?
Yeah, because I was offered free art classes once a week when I was 15.
Right.
I mean, I actually did dance. We did ballet. My sister and I did ballet and tap and jazz when we were little, through our adolescence. And I sang in the choir. And I think that painting and drawing was what I was best at out of all of the creative things that I tried. So
yeah,
I went with that.
And was there a reason that you've gone into representational painting and not abstract art or conceptual art?
I think because the school that I went to was started by an illustrator. Right. And also, I mean, I think it made sense to me. I once taught 2 7-year-old girls, and one, I gave them both an apple and something else to draw. A little still life, and one drew the apple perfectly and was very stressed out about getting it perfect, worked tirelessly, and the other one drew a raccoon in a cape flying through a forest at night with a crescent moon, and I was amazed. this one of my first times teaching, and I was definitely the apple girl. But had I been the raccoon in a cape girl, perhaps I would have gone a different route.
Okay, here's another question from Instagram. This one is from artist Benjamin Arnold in New York, and he asks, I'd like to hear about the path to finding your own personal style and what that journey from a academic slash naturalistic approach has been like.
Okay. Well, I think I'm still finding it. And considering how long it's taken, I might always be finding it. Maybe we all are. As a teacher, I get a lot of requests from private students to help them find their voice. And I refuse these requests because I don't think someone can really help you. I mean, you can give little bits of advice, but if you don't learn it yourself, it's not really yours.
Yeah.
So I think it was through painting a million paintings, and I had, let's see, maybe 10 years ago, setting out to create a body of work that was cohesive and failing constantly because every third painting I would learn something new that was more interesting that would lead me onto a side path, and then I would do two paintings with that new knowledge in them before I learned something new and had to go on another path. And I think, I guess what that taught me is that through continually just trying to make a painting in an honest way, without considering style, because I was trying to make a body of work kind of based on subject matter. I hadn't even considered style that much. But through just painting and trying to represent my subject matter, I came up with solutions, technically, like brush strokes and process that ended up looking unique eventually.
Yeah.
So I think ever trying to conceive of your style before you make a painting is horribly, it's a bad idea. You just have to, I think, for me, like, let's see, teaching, doing a la prima portrait demonstrations, which I did for almost every single one of my classes for 5 years, a live demo, having to paint a portrait from life in front of 15 people while talking and get it to a point where it looked good made me come up with a lot of solutions.
I can imagine.
Were the problems that were creative. And then those solutions became brushstrokes that looked interesting to people. But it's hilarious to me when I see like a student try to copy exactly, like sometimes I'll do a round brushstroke for a highlight on the forehead. But I can see in them copying it, kind of, they're not really, it's not their solution. They didn't come to it themselves. And so it doesn't work anyways. So I think style just comes from repeatedly trying to paint something the best you can.
Right. So it sounds like there wasn't kind of any academic side to it at all, or was there?
I mean, I'm not sure even what you mean by that.
Yeah, me neither. I'm just reading his question, looking at his question here again. You know, from a more academic slash naturalistic approach, and what you've been saying has been very and like naturalistic. It's basically just keep doing it and don't worry about it, and it'll emerge, kind of thing. You know, so it doesn't sound like there was an academic. I'll, you know, counterbalance this hue with this highlight or any of that kind of stuff. It was more just repetition.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. I wasn't sure if he meant. Technically, you know, like academic painting is more, I don't know, like atelier style painting.
Yeah.
I think that eventually it's the solutions with paint and brush and process, eventually combined with subject matter, which make your style. And the subject matter for me has been finding things like you get a gut feeling when you found a subject matter that you should be painting. And also there's more to be interested in. I can paint better on something that I should be painting, that makes sense for me to be painting. I'm more engaged and it's less difficult. So I kind of follow that gut radar for subject matter when figuring out what to paint. Also, I think what makes it more interesting is there's a bit of vulnerability in it, in that it's true to my personal experience. So I think that combined with the technical solutions are what make your style, if you want to call it that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you brought up the subject matter thing, because I was curious about how does it start for you, in terms of what you're going to paint?
A lot of my recent paintings, started several years ago. I was photographing. I have a dress that another painter friend gave to me after she told me the story of her wedding, which I thought sounded very visually romantic. And she, as a gift, shipped me her dress, which is a little like a 60s cocktail dress in green and blue. And I hired a model to come sit and do photos. And out of hundreds of photos, the ones that I liked were the ones that were weirdly blurry and overexposed, and she was in mid-movement. I didn't like any of the proper photos.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that made a small impression. And I think that then shortly after that, I had a big life change and started photographing with my iPhone everything that I was experiencing to kind of observe myself and record it and not forget it. And I found that when I look through the photos, the ones that were similarly, weird with the lighting also just said painting to me. So for a while I was collecting kind of 1 out of 100 photos. So I was just lucking upon paintings, and I wasn't sure if I wanted to then recreate these scenarios on purpose or just paint the things that came to me. That was part of it. Then certain subject matter started to appear as well. And so, I think the subject matter is mostly kind of observing my experience and things that are meaningful or precious or things that I'm leaving behind. A lot of my paintings for a show I just did were paintings from the last place I was, that I won't be anymore. So kind of a goodbye.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's similar to what you were talking about earlier on about finding your style, in that you just sort of splattergun with your camera and then things will just sort of stand out to you. As you say, gut feeling about what you want to paint or what you want to make a painting out of.
Right. I mean, for years before any of this started to happen, I definitely tried to decide what to paint based on paintings I had seen. And I continually failed because I was using other people's ideas and it just didn't make sense. Like this, I can look back at several paintings. I mean, I'm sure that's just part of being a student or a baby artist. So it's definitely very much about gut and intuition and listening to kind of what draws you.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And so it sounds like you work from a combination of either photos or or from life, do you combine, like, do you do any compositing on Photoshop to make up your reference, or is it as
long? No, I really like when I'm painting from a photo to paint the moment that was captured exactly. So that's why only a few of the zillions will work, where all the things come together. I might, you know, pump up the contrast or something like that, but that's probably about it.
Right. And do you print them out or do you work off a monitor?
I have a monitor. Though I've got a new computer now. I might have to get a new monitor. It doesn't work anymore with my new one.
Oh, right.
So I've been doing a lot of still life studies, which has been good. I find that happens a lot. Circumstance will guide my practice. So it's like, well, I have a painting I want to finish, but it's from a photo reference and my thing's not working. So I'll do 8 studies of winter fruit and green onions.
Very good. You paint, as you were saying, in Alla Prima a lot. What's the attraction for you for Alla Prima?
Well, when I first started to learn how to paint, I didn't know there was any other type of painting. That right. is how I was taught. 3 hours, a model or a still life, and make a painting. So I was perplexed to try to figure out on my own after that how anyone could make a giant painting.
Yeah.
Because I had no idea. I think that I've learned more about all of that, and I love Alla Prima now because the limitation of time forces you to use your brain and come up with interesting solutions for the problems. With endless amounts of time, you can easily go down a rabbit hole and kill a painting. I mean, I've definitely in the studio painted 17 paintings on top of each other because of no limitation of time. So
yeah, right.
It's definitely a sink or swim situation and forces you to think.
Right. So if someone was starting out in Alla Prima, like what are the main kind of tips you'd give them or things you've learned that would speed up the kind of, help them hop over, you know, spending a lot of time, wasting time on things that they don't need to?
Well, I teach students to paint from life. I would recommend painting something that will rot or wilt or something that has to go home, like a model, someone. That will force them to not spend too much time. I think when you don't have a knowledge, a process to create a painting that you're confident with, you are just kind of writhing in your own stress. So it's better to limit that and start over. Learn from your first mistake and your second mistake and your third mistake instead of just getting so stressed out with unlimited time. Because Alla Prima doesn't mean quick. You could do paint for 10 hours straight, you know, still yeah. Alla Prima. I created a process for myself, which hilariously later I realized when I compared it to a colleague, another teacher's way of painting, that through the illustrators that taught at my school, they had taken exercises apart, like her process was Flemish method, and the exercises that I was taught were these layers of her process. And they had been dismantled to teach me different things about value and edge and things like that. So to improve myself, I came up with a strict process to start a painting. And it helped me stay organized. So that's what I give my students when they're starting, kind of a step-by-step. I think that the process will kind of keep you calm and organized and not completely responsible for every decision. And every brushstroke doesn't have to be creative genius. That's a lot of pressure. Just step one, step two, step three. And then when you get comfortable with kind of being able to create a decent image on a regular basis, then you get bored and become creative.
Right. Do you paint in a way other than alla prima? Like, do you do color studies ever, or value studies, or grisailles, or is it always just alla prima?
Oh, I definitely do. I guess I would just call them longer paintings in which the paint dries in between and I have to go back into it. The technical term. Because I'm just not capable. I mean, if I could paint it in one go, I would, but not capable. So, but it's not an official, you know, I don't ever draw with pencil before or do a grisaille. No, I'm not very patient. I did, though, have two recent paintings that were similar subject matter, and I did test a drawing first with pencil because it was complicated angles and ellipses. And sprayed it and then painted it. And then the other one I did, as I usually do, was just drawing with paint. And I found that I liked the drawing with paint version better because as I'm drawing and erasing and correcting, there is a texture starting to happen underneath, which is more interesting than the kind of clinical, everything's figured out, now paint it in.
Yeah.
So that was a good learning experience. I'm always kind of trying to give myself little challenges like that. Like, well, what if I do this? Does that help?
Yeah.
So my process isn't very set at all. I'm always changing. I'll sand stuff down, all kinds of things.
Right. And you paint on a combination of, sometimes it's canvas, sometimes it's board. Recently it's aluminium. So there's no...
Were actually just little 5x5 silver leaf panels. The gallery sends them to all their artists and we paint them something cute to sell.
Oh, okay.
So I don't normally paint on that, but it looks pretty neat.
Mm. Do you have a preference, or is it just depends on what you want to paint? And, you know, is it an intuitive kind of thing as well? This, you know, this idea I have, this will be good on canvas, or this will be good on board, or?
I think that I prefer lately board, smooth, just like a cradled birch and several coats of gesso and sand it so it's smooth. I found that I did a couple like that, three, and then I did a fourth painting with a canvas I had, and the effect was less appealing with the grains of the canvas showing through. I felt like it interrupted the image. But I still, when I paint really large, I use canvas because the grain isn't so disruptive. So, and then you can also unstretch them to move them. So that's just kind of practical. But I think I'm preferring the birch board. I do use the Arche oil paper to do studies, and I really like that. So kind of I'm down to those three things for very large works canvas. Yeah.
Right. Okay, here's another question from Instagram. This one is from artist Cheryl Jowers. I hope I'm saying her name right. And she says, I've been following you for a while now. Your palette, I'd like to know how big it is. You have very fluid color in most of your work, at least portrait work, and I'm very attracted to that.
Hold on, I'm going to measure it. I don't know. It's 19 by 15. It's a New Wave palette. It's the Posh palette is the model of it, and I have it with the gray enamel, and it's a flat, just rectangular palette. I've got a bunch of theirs, handhelds and such, but I really like this one. It's become my favorite.
Right. And just in case she was talking about the number of colors you use, how big is it in from that perspective?
Oh, I see. I figured she wanted to know how much room I need to make that.
She might
fluid
be.
Color.
We'll cover both.
But the amount of colors I use varies depending on what I'm painting. But let's see. Black, ultramarine blue, alizarin crimson, cat red, yellow ochre, white is the basic. And then I will add or take away colors depending on what's needed. But I like to start with less, just simpler, not to have to make unnecessary decisions. I teach with a limited palette because I myself used it for 2 years when I felt that my color was looking so gaudy. And I thought, you're out of control with this color, so you're going to have no color for a while and see if you can make it look appealing. And I did for 2 years. It took me a while to learn how to make a little look like a lot. And now I feel like I am responsible enough to put whatever color I want on there and not go crazy.
Okay. You include a color strip at the bottom of some of your paintings, and it looks like it's the colors of the palette for that painting. Is that right?
Sometimes, yeah. And sometimes I'll put other colors. It's a little compositional experiment. I did a small painting called Mr. Midnight Leaves His Home, and I was going to crop it really tiny, but then I liked how it looked kind of floating in the white oil paper, but it needed another compositional element to even it out.
Yeah.
And so I put these little kind of tiles of colors that I remixed from the painting and copied that. That was the first time I did that. And then I just loved it. So I added it to a few other things. And sometimes I'll put something kind of bright and shocking that's not in there. Other times I will, you know, sometimes I do it while I'm painting it. So if I have a color I like, I just put it in the cube. Other times I'll do it afterwards. So just kind of fun for me.
Yeah, yeah. How do you check yourself as you're working? Like, do you turn the canvas upside down, or do you use mirrors? Are you always back and forth to the canvas, or what kind of things do you do to check yourself?
Let's see. Lots of breaks. I think taking a break, looking away from your painting for at least 5 minutes is the best way to check yourself, because you regain objectivity, and when you come back, you immediately see the things that you couldn't see before that were bothering you.
Yeah.
If I'm painting from photos, I will rotate them like very often. So I'll paint the painting at all four orientations. If I'm painting from life, I think it's just breaks. That's pretty much it. You can't turn your still life upside down.
And if you were doing that on your computer, you'd turn it on the computer and then turn the canvas or whatever.
Yeah, anytime I'm having a hard time drawing something, I do that, and it's very helpful.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have a favorite tool or piece of equipment or medium or anything like that that you really love?
I'm looking. I don't know. I mean, the tools are pretty much the same for everything. Paint, brushes, canvas. No, I mean, they're all necessary.
All right.
I mean, I'll go through moods of different shape brushes. Rosemary Brushes has a set, which I've put together as a starter set for my students. And there are these long red sable brushes that are flat. I think they're for lettering originally. But I have said that they're like from a redheaded unicorn because they're so wonderful. So those are kind of great. Everything else, I mean, it's all necessary. There's just not much extra around here.
Right.
So I love them all the tools, because I need them.
Do you have a special medium that you use, or is it just standard or?
It's a 50-50 linseed and Gamsol.
Right.
Yeah.
One thing that really stands out for me in your paintings are the places where you leave out the paint. Like you'll paint a hand, but you'll leave out a large portion of it, or you'll leave out the back of a head or something like that. Is that calculated, or is that just a gut thing that you decide as you're painting it?
I think it is a gut thing, but I think it comes from, I first started noticing this thing, which I'm going to say, when I started doing landscape painting, plein air painting in the city. And I knew that my personality does not want to paint every detail of all the buildings. But I also know that I want to do a beautiful and well-balanced and executed painting. And I had to find, I didn't want to suck at it, but I didn't want to put every detail. And so I had to find a middle ground that felt right to me, where abstraction and leaving things out and putting certain things in and balancing all that worked. Yeah. So I think that those things are me deciding what painting and a finished painting is to me based on what I want to do and what I don't want to do. I think that I definitely, before I started doing that, felt like, you know, and I like hard things, punishing things. So I would definitely paint all the things and all the details and not have fun doing it. And at a certain point I had to say, like, there is no rule. There are no painting police. You don't have to do anything that is not fun for you, as long as you're satisfied with the outcome and it looks honestly appealing to you as the artist. So.
Yeah. And looking at it, it looks really courageous. Like, I was kind of looking at them going, God, I couldn't get my head around how, you know, the line, because it's a line, it's a very fine line between that looks like you haven't finished and no, that is finished and it's brilliant. You know, it reminded me of script writing. There's a thing in script writing where you aim to arrive at the scene as late as possible and to get out of it as fast as possible. You know, so that's one of the ways you can tell, like, bad filmmaking. If, you know, if the scene is about somebody, for example, stealing something from an office building, you don't want to see them parking their car, walking right into the office building, getting into the lift, going up, you know, you want to go into that scene as late as possible. And then also you don't want to see them getting the diamond, putting it in their coat, walking out of the office, walking back into the elevator, back down, getting into their car. You know, you don't see any of that.
Right.
You just want to see the bit where that counts, you know. And your paintings really reminded me of that kind of economy, you know, that you get out, like, just at the right point.
Thank you. I mean, I think I have to credit 5 years of full-time teaching of alla prima portrait for that, where, you know, I had a limited time, and also teaching a room full of students, which made it more limited, and wanting to come up with something appealing and needing to learn economy. And economy, like, as I'm saying, I don't know, all these tools are exactly what I need. There's nothing extra. Economy is something that I find fascinating in general. And so I think that I found it in painting, and it makes sense to me, and hope that's what you're seeing, I guess. My natural inclination for it.
Yeah, but I mean, there's it's partly that, but then the other huge skill that you're not saying is the thing of deciding on what the essence is to focus on. And do you know what I mean? Like, it's one thing to know what to leave out, but the other part of that is, you know, that's the thing. That's the main thing I'm going to focus on. And then everything kind of radiates out from that. Is that a learned thing as well, like, or a good thing?
Well, something I say to my students, that because it's what I do, is I start with, I mean, after I have a general drawing and composition where I know that things are going to be where I want them on the canvas, I will start with the friendliest spot That's how I describe it to them, but it's the part that makes sense to you and that draws you in. It usually is an eye, if it's a portrait or something that is engaging you in your subject. Yeah. So it is the most important. And starting from there and going out from there, I guess there's a point in which nothing else is important and you stop.
Yeah. So. Yeah, Katie O'Hagan was on the podcast a while ago, and she was saying that for her, it's like having your dessert first, you know, rather than the meal.
You know, it's funny. It's interesting because Katie O'Hagan paints exactly like I used to imagine I would.
What do you mean?
I think she's so amazing. And the paintings, I mean, it's just so complete and meaningful and subtle and gorgeous. And this is another thing I say when people are like, how do you find your style? I'm like, you find it because you're uncovering it, but it's already there. And you may not like it. It's like making peace with yourself or your looks or your lot in life. I imagined myself doing paintings so gloriously different than the ones I'm doing now. But as I've learned to, you know, love myself and gray hairs and 5 extra pounds here and there, you know, I've learned to love the kind of discovery of what my voice is, even though it's different than I imagined it would be.
That's hilarious. She said exactly the same thing, not about that she wanted to paint like you, but that she has had to come to terms with, well, that is the way I paint. She actually wants to be more loose.
Yeah. Funny. grass is always greener.
Yeah. Okay, this is a question from another former person who's been on the podcast, artist David Javits. And he asks, or rather he says, as you know, I'm a huge, and he's put 3 U's in there, so that's, you know, extra huge. I'm a huge fan of your work. Several of your paintings are done on paper, including one of my favorites, Where Were You? What do you like about painting on paper, especially considering that it might be perceived as a substandard substrate for oils from a collector's perspective? I'm used to the idea of masterful drawings on paper, but a masterful painting on paper seems somehow incongruous, and your paintings are particularly masterful! Exclamation mark.
Aw, thanks, David, who is also a huge Star Trek fan. I needed to dork out to somebody while I was watching every single episode that was ever made. And so he's been kind enough to let me message him with dorky comments because Matt, my boyfriend, is sick of hearing it. Anyways, paper. Well, I discovered the Arche oil paper when I did a residency at the de Young Museum. The folks at Royal Talons donated a bunch because it is logical to have this kind of pads of easy to access, already kind of primed stuff for people to use. So I offered anyone who wanted to come in to paint. So I started using it to get ready for that 5-week gauntlet and started to really love it. It took me, I don't know, 10 paintings to get used to how it worked. But currently, I think what's appealing about it is, number one, there's no stress. I am painting for the joy of that moment. I'm not painting considering a collector or archival qualities. I am doing a study. I am learning something. When you're painting on a piece of paper you pull out from a pad, though they are archival, I would just like to say, right, to everyone who's bought one, which are a lot of you. I checked that out before I started using them. There's just zero pressure. If I spend a long time stretching a big, beautiful canvas and putting 10 coats of gesso and sanding, it takes weeks. There's a bit of trepidation when I'm standing in front of it. So whatever I can do to make things friendly, right?
Yeah, right.
And that lack of pressure makes me more able to be creative and brave and do those things that like you were saying, and those probably the things that you were looking at were on paper. And there's, I'd like to be like that with every painting, and I'm getting better at that. But the paper has really helped with me trying things that might fail. Then also, you can get a variety of textures of paint on one surface. You can, I like to wash it with a 50-50 linseed Gamsol medium. I usually put a color because the linseed will over time turn really gross yellow on the white paper if you leave any of it showing. So I wash it with that and a color. And then you can start with like a watercolory look. The paper is absorbent, so it soaks it in. And then later you can build up very thick. So it's fun to experiment with the dynamic range of paint textures as well.
Yeah.
You can also do post, what is it? My old studio neighbor said post completion composition. If you didn't hit it the first time, you can trim some off.
So all right. Yeah, yeah.
Easily. That's a benefit.
And you haven't had any collectors kind of or galleries sort of saying, oh, look, this is just on paper, or just going back to David's question, that hasn't been an issue?
No. Also, can we step back and take a look at the broader art world and look at what people are making art out of and into and how much is spent on work that's falling apart from the 60s and still as they're reselling it and chunks of paint are falling off. I'm trying to extricate myself from the idea of what a finished painting is and what a painting should be, and anything that will stifle me being able to actually make a great painting.
Yeah.
Because that's so hard. So I don't, it's not like, I feel like I owe my own exploration and experience and path more than I owe, I don't know, a cautious collector.
Yeah, very good. I watched a documentary recently about, they were trying to restore or conserve an Amsel Kiefer picture. Huge thing, like it was, I don't know, looked like about 8 meters high by about, I don't know, 7 or 8 meters wide. And when he made it to decompose and fall apart. That was kind of part of the concept of the painting. So it was really weird looking at these people trying to conserve something that was designed by the artist to decompose, you know?
Yeah, I don't know what I think. I think I said it all.
You did. If you're enjoying this podcast, remember you can support it by going to patreon.com/John Dalton gently does it. Okay. In a recent interview you gave to Fine Art Products, you were talking about learning to be an artist. And you said it's really just about age and wisdom and bravery, which I thought was great. But can you explain that a bit more?
Well, I think it kind of goes back to the things I was saying about finding my voice and subject matter and all that. I think for me, bravery has been putting things out there to be criticized, and also believing in myself enough to offer instruction to other people. That was really hard for me.
Right.
Just finding confidence. But I think, you know, as we grow into mature humans and continue to do so, we also, if we're also making art, that art matures. I think it's just being an artist is being alive. I think if anything you are doing, if you're a chef or an accountant, it's probably you get better as you mature.
Yeah. Okay. Which is more important for you or to you, the finished painting or the act of making the painting?
I think probably there will be different answers at different times for different paintings. The act of making a painting is basically the act of thinking and struggling and learning and, you know, being in your own head. I spend a lot of time alone. Sometimes I look at paintings and remember what radio show I was listening to. Every time I see it, many paintings after I finish them, I don't like them for a really long time. And then some of them I like again, and some of them I never like again. I don't know. I think they're both important at different times.
Right.
But I have a rule that I'll never not sell a painting if someone wants it, no matter which one it is, because of an experience I had when I first started selling anything long time ago. I worked in a antique/chocolate shop in New Orleans, and the owner was really supportive, and she put a couple of my drawings on the wall. She called me one day and said, "This drawing, she wants to buy it. This lady wants to buy it." And I cried because it was the best one I'd done. And I told her, "I'm crying on the phone. I don't want to sell it. I've never done anything that good. I can't." She said, "Felicia, you must sell it. Come on, you'll make more. You need to pay your rent." And so I said, "Okay." And then I'd had a photo of it. I looked at it like 3 months later and thought, "That was a stinker. I can't believe anyone wanted to buy that. Phew, sucker." And so that really stuck with me. And I thought, you will always make more better paintings. Don't hold on to anything. Moving forward is the key.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess, actually, and that would really re-answer your first question more clearly. I suppose the act of painting them is more important than the final product for me.
Right. Okay.
I learned a thing. Good question.
Okay. Well, following on from that then, which is more important to you, the act of making the painting or allowing yourself to be in a position in your life to make the painting? Meaning organizing your life to allow yourself to be an artist.
And I don't know if I separate them. That seems chicken and egg like. I mean, I spent many, many, many years working towards organizing my life to get it to where it is now, where I can paint whenever I want. I'm not even sure I know how to answer that question. I'm sorry.
Well, it's that thing of like, I think I heard you saying it or I read in an interview, you were talking about how difficult it is to be an artist and how being creating yourself as an artist is a pretty artistic thing to do just on its own.
I said that, huh? I don't remember.
I think you did. Maybe I'm making it up. I don't think I am. Or maybe I'm paraphrasing. But I was just kind of, they seem to kind of, one seem to follow on from the other because making art is such a, from reviewed from the outside, it looks like it's a, you know, you create a thing and it's the thing that's the big deal. Whereas from when I was getting ready to chat with you, what started to come out was this idea that for you, making the painting was just as important, if not in some cases more important. And then the next thing on from that was that creating your life in such a way that you could make paintings was even more important.
Yeah.
That right? Or
I guess it was. Maybe I'm living in the moment too much, because now that I have finally situated myself in a way that I can paint practically 24 hours a day most of the year, I'm not thinking about that anymore.
Yeah.
So it definitely wasn't easy to manage to get to this point, and I definitely think there are a lot of sacrifices, which don't feel like sacrifices to me anymore, but I think they were there. I think it's all kit and caboodle, important-wise.
Right. Okay, this might be a hard question to answer, but I'm going to ask you anyway.
Okay.
Why do you think that in this modern age, with all the innovation that has gone on right from the Industrial Revolution right through to what we've got now, why do you think that painting is still around?
I do ask myself that. Especially as most painting today seems far less glorious than, you know, you're not putting it in a church or here. Some people are, I suppose, but most of us are selling to people who are putting it over their couch. I guess it might have something to do with that thing that I said earlier, that most children draw and find joy in that, in recording something from their mind or from life. It's a satisfying thing to do. Makes you feel accomplished. Also, I think that people really like, in general, really like a skill, even if it's kind of looked down upon by intellectual art world, over intellectual art world as passé. I think that when I did that residency at the De Young Museum, so many people came in and said something like, "Oh my gosh, this looks so real." And then they would whisper, "I don't really get art. Like, some of those, I feel like I could do it. And I feel like I'm not allowed to say that I don't get it, and or that they feel stupid." So yeah. I think that representational painting, especially, not that that's the only type of painting that's still going on that could use thought about, it's literal and people can understand it. And that's comforting, I think. That's what I heard from these people.
Yeah.
So I suppose, yeah, people enjoy doing it and people enjoy looking at it and it has some value.
All right. Do you think teaching is part of your art?
Yeah. I think I learn as much about art and also life from teaching as hopefully my students do from being taught by me. I like the online students I have, it's all private. We do Skype sessions and I send them assignments via email, and all of them are stressed out and yearning to do something meaningful and amazing. And I get to learn myself, relearn, and tell them that we all are and we're all connected in that way. And it's nice to know that people care about doing something well and meaningful. Yeah, so I feel like when I'm depressed about painting or the art world or, you know, having any little existential crisis, when I teach a class, it grounds me and, I don't know, invigorates my own practice. So yeah, I definitely think, and it's funny because when I started teaching, I had this sinking feeling that it would stop me from becoming some modernist idea of an artist, you know.
Yeah.
Perhaps if I had it, I wouldn't have to teach it, or I suppose I'm not good enough, but if I have to make a living doing this. And that was disproved shortly after I started doing it, in which I was learning so much.
Yeah. Okay. In that same interview you gave to the Fine Arts Products, you said, "I want to teach people how to take agency and responsibility for their own education and creative experience." And that's a lovely statement. It has a lot of promise. It makes me feel good when I read it, but I'm not exactly sure what it means.
Well, for example, I have to think of one student recently who I gave 8 lessons to, and on the last couple, I made him list out problems that he had and brainstorm solutions for those problems in the form of exercises based on types of exercises I'd given him. Then we had a discussion about it, and he tried one of his own ideas. So that kind of thing. When I was teaching my weekly classes in San Francisco before I moved here, before I let anyone start, I would go around and maybe not every day, but often ask them, what is their goal? A single goal for that single study in that day, and something simple. They weren't allowed to say, make it amazing or be brilliant, you know? It had to be draw with all straight lines or get truer color than I have been getting or get a likeness, that kind of thing. And so we'd go around and every single person would say their one goal and everyone would hear it. And then we would check back in on if they were staying focused on that. So that's what I mean. I don't want people just following my process and copying my brushstrokes and subject matter. I want them to learn how to teach themselves, which is what painting is to me. It's a constant lesson.
Yeah.
That's probably why we can do it for so long as a career, because there's never an end of things to learn. You're always a student.
Yeah.
But are you a good student or not? I guess I'm trying to teach students how to continue to be good students.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Do you think you'll open a school down the track? Is that like on the horizon for you?
No way, Jose. No, I've watched my friend work on her school and I've realized I've gone in an opposite direction of private lessons, which I really like. Talking to one person at a time, and I still do workshops for groups, which is interesting to travel around and see different cities and different people. But I love the private lessons and really kind of getting involved with individuals. So yeah, I think I'll keep teaching, you know, for the foreseeable future. I'm teaching less than I was, so it's not exhausting me anymore. It was for a while. But I don't want to be responsible for someone's entire art education. That's a lot of responsibility. And I don't have a process that will never change, I don't know how I could decide to say, these are the steps. These are the steps to make an art.
Yeah.
So I'd rather say, these are the steps to learn how to draw well. What you do with it is up to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. On your website, you have this quote from Charles Hawthorne, and part of the quote is, put off finish, make a lot of starts. Can you explain what that means to you?
Well, I think it supports the a la prima subject matter of the workshops, which is where I think I have it posted. But I think that that's the strength of a la prima painting. You are not trying to make, they're studies. Even if they become a complete work of art, they are not intended as anything other than a learning situation. So if you start one and screw it up, you can just start another one and learn. It's like that thing I was saying about you can do 17 paintings on one canvas and get extremely frustrated by the end, or you can do 17 paintings on 17 different canvases and see the process and learn from each one, which situation is going to have you remembering your solutions better, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Many paintings.
You were saying about online students. Are you doing that now, or are you going to be doing it in the new year, or this year, 2017?
I'm doing it now. I've been doing it since early this year. I started doing it when I moved to Michigan because I had so many students who had been studying with me for many years who wanted to continue to study with me. And so I gave it a shot. I was doubtful about its value to begin with because my old, my usual teaching technique is demonstration, and I can't do a live painting demonstration over Skype effectively.
Yeah.
So, but I found it has been helpful. It's not for everyone, but there are people that I think it's been helpful for. So I've enjoyed it a lot.
Right. And if people want to do that, they can do it through your website. That's how they.
Yeah, there's a teaching page, and then there's the different types of teaching, and there's a way to apply online.
All right. As you said before, you were waiting on tables for 15 years before you went into art full time. Knowing what you do now, could you have left sooner, do you think?
I'm not sure that it's relevant. But for the sake of argument.
Well, like, you know, if you were to go back and talk to yourself in the first year of those 15 years.
Well, I was 15. So from 15 to 30, I waited tables. Yeah, I'm sure I could have accomplished something faster if circumstances had been different. I moved out at 17. I had a pretty rocky end of the teens and early 20s, trying to figure out how to be a living adult who was healthy. So for me, I don't think anything could have been different. But for someone with means and sanity and a supportive family, perhaps right. They could, go to a 4-year program and learn skills quickly and then be extremely social and make connections and get into good positions and find their voice. I don't know.
I'm more thinking of somebody who maybe is in a similar kind of situation and is kind of, they really want to do it, but maybe they haven't yet. And I'm just kind of wondering if when you think about yourself back then, if there's something that you now know where you kind of go, oh, if I'd known that back then, I could have just done it sooner. But maybe that's not the case.
Well, to be honest, I'm glad it's taken me this long. I find that students are coming out of art schools with degrees in fine art and a body of work that they've somehow come up with their voice by, 20-something? I feel like it's not healthy. I think that if I had I don't know. I have seen very young artists with amazing strength in their voice. So,
yeah.
I'm just the wrong person to ask. I don't know. I don't know what I could have done differently. I think I don't really think about those kind of things because, then I might, have to go buy a bottle of whiskey.
Right. Well, we don't want that. Okay. So when you think about all the paintings that you've made, is there one that kind of stands out for you that was particularly moving for you to make?
Yeah. Black Dog, which is a big painting, was critical, pivotal piece. I started it at the end of my marriage, which I didn't realize was the end. And I got to a point where, and I might have told this story before, so you've all heard it, forgive me. I got to a point where I didn't feel like finishing it in a way. This was kind of that point of realizing my own inclination and style of abstraction. But I didn't have the guts to do a 60x72 painting with a lot of abstraction. Yeah. So I put it against the wall because I had ego and I wanted to impress people with my skill. And I knew I could paint all the fingers and all the fingernails and all the hair strands. But I really loathed the idea. And a painter friend of mine came and talked to me about it and gave me some encouraging words, but I still didn't have the guts to not paint all those things. So I, turned it against the wall for 6 months. And during that time, a lot of personal craziness happened. And then when I turned it back around on the other side of that craziness or into it, I no longer gave a crap about what anyone else thought about my skill, prowess as a painter. And it was easy for me to not finish it in that way. And so I think that painting is really important for me because it was the moment I learned to be more comfortable with myself and less worried about putting up a disguise about, you know, how important I was or whatever. Yeah. So that's a story about that. I'm doing a painting right now of a stove, which I adore. But I think it's something about the colors. There's a peachiness and like a periwinkleness to it. It makes this white stove look like an opal. And when I'm sitting in front of it, I feel like sun is shining, you know, on my face. So that's a completely different experience, but there's something about it. I love to cook. It's kind of, I've decided that cooking is my hobby. It's practical, needs to be done, but also fun and creative. So I don't know. Painting the stove is like painting this kind of totem of where I feel happy.
Yeah. If I've got it right, that painting Black Dog, that's the one, is that the one that the model was wearing the old wedding dress in?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, okay, I thought that was the one. Okay. What are you working on at the moment that no one else knows about?
That no one else knows about. I'm pretty internet present. I mean, I have self-portrait, but no one knows what it looks like at the moment, but I posted a few shots. I've got a couple watercolor studies going, just kind of trying to teach myself how to do that well. I'm not really showing anyone those. it's difficult, but I think I'm starting to learn something about it.
I can highly recommend Mario Robinson's watercolor book. It's very good.
Oh, yeah. Great idea. I love his work.
Yeah, his book is brilliant.
I'll write it down. I've got three or four really big canvases stretched that I want to work on. Oh, I know. My downstairs neighbor. She's a fascinating girl. Really interesting looking and interesting in all the other ways. I've had her to start coming up and sitting for me. So I've done a drawing and a painting so far, and I have an idea for more elaborate, more figurative work with her, but I'm trying to not plan it because I'm the kind of person who will overplan and then choke it to death before I get to it. So,
all right.
So I need to just kind of allow myself to be exploring with her in the studio for a while and see where it goes. Also, I'm very bad at actually predicting where my paintings will go, where my plans will go. It's better to just let them develop.
Yeah. What would you say is the biggest challenge you're facing at the moment as an artist?
Thinking about selling artwork and making artwork, I feel like those things are challenging to balance, I guess. I think that I saw someone, was it, posted on Facebook, paint what you want, you'll find a way to sell it or something like that. And then someone else said, yeah, but what if you go broke? And I think that there are kind of several things you can do. You can make your money not doing art and make whatever art you want. I think you can paint things that you know will sell. And I think you can just struggle and be frugal. there's different options. And I think that trying to find a balance for what works for you, where you can have enough drive and interest. For me, needing to make money from art is healthy because it forces me forward. I think being comfortable is not great for creativity, but also being able to have enough space to create meaningful work is important. And if you're doing, you know, a zillion small, easy to sell, banal subject matter paintings that people will like, then you're not being creative. So I think for me, the challenge of how much to care about, you know, these things and how to balance them, that's an interesting challenge that I've been thinking about a lot.
Right.
I suppose also, like, what is success as an artist? You know, it's funny because I, since I was young, until I moved here, I don't think I ever had an existential crisis ever, because I didn't have enough time. I was always working many jobs and hustling and, you know, just trying to pay rent in a lot of big expensive cities I lived. And since I've moved to Detroit, I have ample space and time and money, because it's so affordable to live here. And my brain is going insane with all this time to think about all these things, which seemed superfluous when you're kind of struggling to survive. You know, not like it was a big struggle, but it was a lot of work. I don't know. I'm these days thinking, are these things important? What's important? I don't know. I think it's interesting to have the time and space. Like, are you an artist if you don't have time to think about these things? Maybe not. Maybe I wasn't fully an artist till I had enough time and freedom to start wondering about whether what I'm doing is meaningful or not, or valuable, or if monetary success and acclaim as an artist is relevant at all in the meaningful life of an artist, those kind of things.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy with having time to think about this stuff. And it's also just one more damn thing to manage.
Yeah, I had Vincent Desiderio on the podcast last week, actually. And his thing is, what contribution are you making to art history? Which is a pretty intense question to be asking yourself as well.
Yeah, well, he's been making contributions longer than I have. I don't know if at this point I'm thinking that, but I do think, what contribution am I making to now? That question seems more relevant to me at this point, because maybe that's my personality, or maybe I'm just not thinking that art history will remember me. That's just too much to think about. But okay, well, that's one of the crises for sure. I've spent a lot of time thinking about, especially with all the political crap that's going on here, to sit down and paint seems very important and completely asinine. You know, am I giving anything to the world by painting stoves and houseplants and self-portraits? I don't know. Then it's completely unanswerable, and I just have to keep doing it because it's what I do. And I hope someone finds meaning in it at some point. I don't know if I can answer these questions. That's what I'm talking about, existential crisis.
Yeah. But I think that's a really good question to ask yourself. I think these, regardless of what you're doing, whether you're painting or changing tires or waiting on tables or running a country,
mm-hmm.
valuable question.
I think that's why I like cooking. Whenever I'm having a hard time with my painting, I go and cook something. And it's inherently a valuable thing to do. And you immediately, someone says, "Oh, yum," and you feel satisfied. Though my sister is a chef, and the career path is not nearly as satisfying as just cooking a meal for the person you love and having them say, "Thanks, this is good."
Yeah, yeah.
Same problems there as here.
Yeah, yeah. I think it comes down to that other thing as well, is the thing of the difference between doing and being. You know, like, we kind of get caught up on the thing of that, like, our only value is in what we do rather than who we are.
Well, I suppose if you're doing, just thinking on what you were saying, I suppose if you're painting what you truly should paint, which of course is different for everyone, but in my opinion, then you are painting who you are. You know what I mean? I guess that's what I'm trying to get at. And the only value I have been able to come up with for it is that other people will be able to relate with it. Maybe not very many, but a few who maybe have had similar experiences, and something about a truth you paint about yourself, because that's really the only truth you know is about yourself, will resonate with someone else's, and people will feel less alone. Now, that sounds cheesy, I suppose, but that's the only thing I've been able to come up with for why the hell should I keep painting these pictures of things that look like the things, you know?
Yeah. That's very similar to something Rothko said when he was, you know, he didn't like giving interviews, but somebody, a journalist, got into him about, you know, what does it mean? What does it mean? What does it mean? Eventually he lost his temper a little bit. And he said something along the lines of, I paint the loneliness in me, and hopefully that will speak to the loneliness in somebody else, and we'll connect in some way. They'll feel a little bit less lonely.
I just sat in front of one at the DIA, which is a fabulous museum. I was really surprised, as people told me I was going to be murdered as soon as I got off the plane here. but I actually like to hear that. I hadn't heard that about Rothko. And I sat in front of it because, you know, in 100 movies, that's what they do. You sit in front of a Rothko and you're moved. So I sat down because there was a bench in front of it. And I think it's helpful to hear you recount that bit of an interview from him, because it didn't seem lonely to me, but it did seem friendly, which is kind of what he was saying.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he'd be happy to hear that. Right. Well, that segues nicely into my last question, which I've kind of asked everybody in one way or another. And that's about future generations, and not necessarily about art, but you can answer about art. And it's this thing of, if there's one thing that you could pass on to future generations, what would it be?
That's really hard. I'm trying to think, what did I get that was valuable? I think I at some point would like to offer someone who wants to learn something I can teach them, but who has no means, you know, someone young, like I was when I was offered some help, something. So I mean, that's personal, very literal next generation answer. It's hard for me to think on a global scale. I mean, you know, peace on earth and love and recycling. I don't know.
Did you say cycling or recycling?
Recycling.
Recycling.
I think I would have said that, you know, if you keep trying, you can do whatever you want. But also, I don't know if that's true for everyone. I don't know. What would I pass on? I don't think I have the ability to pass on what the world needs. That's a lot of things. You've overwhelmed me with your question. I'm sure I'll think about it at 4 a.m. and go, damn it, Felicia, you should have thought of this brilliant thing, which you already knew.
Well, I think being able to help somebody who needs help, that's a pretty good thing, like you just said, you know, practical, close to home kind of thing. If everybody did that, that'd be good.
That would be good. The neighborhood I live in is not wealthy. It's kind of a immigrant springboard, maybe you'd describe it. I think there's been different waves of immigrants for many, many, many decades here. Sometimes I walk around and wonder, are any of these kids going to get the chance to like take an art class? So I have been thinking about figuring out who to talk to about offering an art class in this neighborhood. I'm fighting my other inclination, which is to hide in my studio and make zero friends. So these are the two things that I've been thinking about. But this city has police that don't come when you call them that your neighbor's getting robbed, and no recycling. So it might take me a little while to organize an art class, but I do want to do that. So I suppose that's a small thing I can do.
Yeah. Yeah, I had Bo Bartlett on the podcast a while ago, and he was telling me about, he does art classes for homeless people. And it's quite transformative, he was saying. He said they are all painting what they thought, because I think he runs it in the basement of a church. Not that it's church-oriented, but initially nobody wanted to paint anything slightly controversial. And then eventually one person said, I want to paint this thing, but I don't think you're going to like it. And they were like, paint whatever you like. And this stream of paintings came out of this guy, all about his childhood and very dark but brilliantly cathartic kind of stuff, you know. Now they're all doing
that's it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
it's wonderful.
Very inspiring. Yeah.
Listen to that. I like that.
Okay. Well, we've talked about your website. I'll put a link up to it. It's just your name, isn't it? I think it's FeliciaForte.com, isn't it? It's nothing.
It is.
Art, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're pretty active on Facebook and Instagram. And I think that all links from your website, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great.
It does.
Okay, well, thanks very much for the time. It's been lovely chatting with you, getting to know you a little bit. I really like your artwork. I particularly enjoyed getting ready to have a chat with you, because I just got to, you know, look at it more, because it's that kind of artwork. It's like, it's just enjoyable to look at. And the more I look at it, the more I want to look at it. And it's very inspiring in your choice of subject matter. I mean, it's that thing, that wonderful thing that art can do every now and then, which is to draw your attention to something that you would have overlooked. And particularly, like, as an artist myself, you kind of looking at things and going, yeah, that's nice and everything, and I like it, but I don't think I'd make a painting out of it. But you do. You make a painting out of it, and you made me relook at things and kind of go, geez, that's brilliant. Like, that is so good, you know, and that's something I would have overlooked. I know I wouldn't have thought to paint that, but it's brilliant. And that's a combination of all this technical stuff that you're talking about, but just your own, you know, your spirit or whatever it is that makes one person want to paint something. But I find it great. And very inspiring. And the same with that, what I was talking about with the economy of the way you get into a painting and get out of a painting. It's just it's kind of like looking at somebody walk a tightrope to me. It's that kind of
it feels like that
breathtaking,
when I'm doing,
you know?
It
yeah, but it's captured there. It's almost that kind of knife edge is kind of captured, frozen in a way. But that's the thing about your paintings that I also like, is they're very vibrant. There's something really vibrant about them, you know. And yeah, but that and all those other reasons.
Well, thank you.
Real. They're brilliant. Yeah, well done.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Okay, well, I'm sure we'll be in touch in the future, but for now we'll say goodbye.
It's been really nice talking to you.
You too.
I look forward to talking to you again in the future.
All right, well, until we talk again, then we'll say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Remember to go to the Gently Does It Patreon page. Go to patreon.com/JohnDaltonGentlyDoesIt and join the conversation.
I've never felt this good in my entire life. Make me some spaghetti. We're better than you thought, but not as good as we think. We are the Argyle.